This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott.
The American economy.
Climate change without.
Hacking.
Different religions in it.
Sustainability.
Social media.
Security. Freedom.
Technology.
Marriage.
Essentially ethics.
Privacy.
This is Rethink 2014, presenting ways of challenging our habits and assumptions and the status quo. Today, rethinking the promise of the American dream. The statistics are eye-popping. This week, Oxfam International reported that the net worth of the world's 85 richest people is more than the bottom half of the entire global population. It's about as many people as you can fit in a subway car, owning as much as about 3.5 billion people. While the income gap in the U.S. is less severe, still, incomes among America's wealthiest 1% have quadrupled since the 1970s, while real wages for the bottom half of the workforce have stagnated. So what does that mean for assertions of equality laid out in the Declaration of Independence? And what about our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? In his latest book, Who Stole the American Dream?, Hedrick Smith chronicles the dismantling of America's middle class over the past 4 decades. Hedrick Smith is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, an Emmy-winning correspondent for Frontline, and we welcome you here to Word of Mouth.
Virginia, it's nice to be with you, and nice to be in New Hampshire this time of year.
Well, I'm surprised to hear you say that, but glad.
Well, it's great weather and great audiences and great interest in this book and in the ideas behind it and the ideas that you were talking about, the rethinking of America.
Well, it's kind of incontrovertibly hitting us in the face right at the moment.
It is.
That things aren't working the way that they were intended to.
Yeah. Well, we had a period back in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s when the middle class really shared in the wealth and the prosperity and the growth of the nation. As productivity rose, the income of the household income of the average American family rose as well. But in the last 30 years, productivity continued to shoot up and the income of the average American worker stayed absolutely stagnant, absolutely dead zero. To take the Oxfam figures and bring them to America, the Walton family, which owns more than half of Walmart, the children and heirs of Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart, are 4 of the 11 richest people in America, and they own more wealth than the bottom 40% of the American population, one family.
You trace, in fact, pinpoint a memo called the Powell Memo from 1971. This is during the Nixon presidency, authored by Lewis Powell. He was later to become a Supreme Court justice. What did that memo set in motion?
Powell was a corporate attorney, well known in the corporate world, close to a lot of people at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And he saw what was contributing to the prosperity of the middle class, a strong labor movement, a strong consumer movement, strong women's movement, arguing for higher pay for women, strong environmental movement, peace movement, civil rights movement. All these citizen movements from the grassroots, said Powell, are threatening the survival of the free enterprise system in America. And he suggested even Walter Reuther, the head of the UAW, United Auto Workers Union, was more of a threat than Soviet communism. But the point was he was ringing the alarm bell. He shared those ideas with his friends at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and they circulated his memo around the country. What's amazing to me is what happened, that so many big business leaders paid attention to him. Within 4 months, the Business Roundtable was formed. That is now the most powerful business lobbying group in Washington. Didn't exist before the Powell Memo. The number of companies that had offices in Washington at the time he wrote, 175. 8 years later, 2,425. 9,000 registered corporate lobbyists. This is an army. This is all before Ronald Reagan came into office. Jimmy Carter was president. Democrats controlled the Congress, and Powell's army went to work. Cut the tax rate, established the 401k program, which shifted the cost burden of retirement largely from company books to the pocketbooks and checkbooks of ordinary people, changed the corporate bankruptcy laws, lowered the capital gains tax, lowered the corporate tax. They began the trends in the Congress of 1978, which I think was the most pivotal Congress of the last 50 years. Powell's memo, I think, is the most neglected, important historical document of the last half century. And it changed the landscape of power in Washington from one that was very susceptible to the pressures of consumer and women's and environmental and labor movements to one that has really been dominated by business lobbying.
Hedrick Smith is with us. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, author of several books, including most recently, Who Stole the American Dream? We're speaking with him as part of Word of Mouth's Rethink 2014 series. And Hedrick Smith, let's talk about some of these specifics, this transfer of wealth. Often we hear a narrative that the pension system sunk Detroit. It's unsustainable. We can't pay pensions to people who are workers. Now, you spoke with Jack Bogle, founder and CEO of the Vanguard Group, about who is actually making money now off of the 401k system of retirement.
Unbelievable. This guy is from the heart of the mutual fund industry. Now, the mutual fund industry was probably the biggest single factor in marketing 401ks. The 401k, by the way, was never intended as a national retirement system. It was stuck into the law by a Republican congressman from upstate New York as a favor to Xerox and Kodak and a handful of New York banks as a tax shelter for profit-sharing bonuses to executives. So it was never intended to be a national retirement program. But when they got that reinterpreted and applied it to regular salaries, the mutual fund industry said, wow, we could make billions, maybe trillions, if we could manage that money. And what Bogle does, and Bogle was the founder of the Vanguard Group, he says that is true. And he actually walks you through what happens if you were to invest a dollar or invest $1,000 or invest $10,000 over a period of 40 years with the normal investment returns. After those 40 years, it would be seven times as much. I think a dollar would become $7.04. Sorry. Mm-hmm. But if you have the mutual funds taking fees for managing your money of just 2% a year, you would come out with less than half of that, and they would come out with more than half of that.
46% to 54%.
It's unbelievable that what happens with compound interest for growth happens with compound take of their fees. Mm-hmm. And as he points out, you risk 100% of the money. They take no risk, and they come out with more than half of the outcome. But the numbers, I mean, when he told me those numbers, it blew my mind. That is a part. I didn't call the book at the beginning Who Stole the American Dream. It was The Dream at Risk. But when I began to see what the powers that be in Washington and what the financial managers on Wall Street were doing to people, I came to the conclusion the dream was actually being stolen.
Well, this is just one example of the deck being stacked against the regular person.
Right.
But what's our responsibility here, Hedrick Smith? I mean, we took out mortgages. We took out equity on our homes. So to what extent are the 99% in the vernacular responsible for dismantling the American dream themselves?
Well, to some extent, they're responsible. I think an awful lot of people who borrowed from their homes and took out loans were paying for the cost of a college education, were paying for health, in which the costs were skyrocketing way beyond, remember, wages that were stagnant. But we were also responsible by being ignorant, by not informing ourselves that, in fact, we were being sold lousy mortgages. Most of the people, this is really interesting, most of the people who were victims of subprime loans were people who qualified for prime loans and they got talked into or bamboozled into or cheated into, literally lied to, about the loans they were getting and the need for getting them. And the brokers who sold them those loans made more money by selling them bad loans. But the other thing is, we've sat on our hands politically. I mean, if you think government doesn't work, then look at who's paying for government to work. Government is working for the people who are paying for government to work for them. The people who are putting big money into campaigns, the people who are putting big money into lobbying, government is doing what they want. So if we want to get government back, we've got to get active politically here in New Hampshire and all across the country. And in that sense, we're very responsible because we're sitting inactive saying, oh, well, they're so powerful. Lobbyists have too much power. They have too much influence. Special interests have taken over Washington, but we're not doing anything about it. And you've got a great thing going here in New Hampshire. You have these town meetings. You have town petitions. You have ways of actually addressing the government in an organized way, and doing it with your friends and neighbors.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, making a difference. Because, you know, You're a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. A lot of great facts, a lot of great data laid out here. You come up with a little bit of a different kind of model, some steps that we can take, and the model of Germany for how that country avoided this huge gap in wealth between the rich and the poor. Well, what can we learn from that model?
Well, what's interesting is I got to Germany because, like a lot of other people, I'd heard the argument that the gap in income and the way American companies operate today was inevitable. This is globalization. This is modern technology. We can't compete if we raise wages. We can't compete if we give higher benefits. And somebody suggested to me along the way, well, why don't you take a look and see whether or not other countries operate the same way as America and look the same way as America? The biggest trading company, country besides China and Japan and America is Germany. It's about a quarter the size of America. They took a different path in the road. They stuck with what we used to do, which is stakeholder capitalism. German companies have raised the pay of their workers about five times faster than the workers' pay has been raised in America. What's interesting is from 2000 to 2010, with our wage structure, we had a $6 trillion trade deficit. Germany, at the same time paying higher wages, had a $2 trillion trade surplus. So the wages weren't the reason. And the Germans also kept 21% of their workforce in manufacturing, while our workforce in manufacturing drifted down to 9%. Why care? Those are among the best jobs for the middle class in the country, and not just for the workers who do those jobs. Every manufacturing job has a 3.5 multiplier effect. It generates 3.5 more jobs. So Germany keeping all those manufacturing jobs has had a stronger, healthier economy, and we can see it dominating Europe, the engine of Europe today. So there is another way to go. And the way they do that is with a lot of collaboration between management and labor in Germany, a lot of collaboration between the government and the private sector to try to save the best high-tech, high-paying jobs in Germany. Maybe a more collaborative approach would work better here.
So in these 10 steps to reclaim the dream that you lay out for us, of course, we can't go through all 10 right now, but you're talking about infrastructure jobs. You're talking about innovation, science, high-tech research, manufacturing renaissance here in the U.S., buying American, fixing the tax code. Many of these things are in the Obama agenda now, but aren't able to go anyplace.
Yeah, I think what's interesting, I'm not interested in debating the president's agenda. The ideas that I came up with here came from lots of other sources. So they're not his agenda. But I don't think, Virginia, that these things are going to happen unless we change our political system. We're stymied in Washington. We have polarized parties. We have voters in the middle don't tend to go out. They say, I can't find a candidate I like. The candidates are too extreme to the right, too extreme to the left. That's polarization generated by gerrymandering. And that's one of the reasons why Washington doesn't work. So we got to go back and look at our political system. We've got this money which is flooding into the campaigns, and that's adding to the polarization. So we've got to start to look at how our system operates. Re-engineer our politics, if you will, get it back to the way it was working before, bring the middle out, the middle class in the economy, the middle in the political spectrum, and we'll get back to the kind of growth and the bipartisan politics that we had when we were having our heyday in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. Mm-hmm. It isn't just globalization. We've let the system get away from us. We need to get back on the path for reform.
Hedrick Smith, I want to thank you for your time today.
Great pleasure. Thanks for being with you.
Hedrick Smith is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, an Emmy-winning correspondent for Frontline, a best-selling author. His most recent book is called Who Stole the American Dream? And today at 4 o'clock, he's going to be speaking and signing books at Toadstool Bookstore in Milford. At 7, he's going to be speaking at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Manchester. And tomorrow at 5, he's going to be at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Nashua and also be at the Granny D celebration. So he's really covering the waterfront here in New Hampshire.
You got a lot going on.
You can find details on all of these events on our website. That's at wordofmouthradio.org.